From WKAR's Studio S at Michigan State University, this is Current Sports.
What is up, beautiful people? You are now tuned into WKAR's Current Sports. I am your host, Al Martin. It is Tuesday, May 10th, 2016, and we have, as always, a fantastic hour of current sports in store for all of our listeners out there. Again, if you want to be a part of today's show, you know that number. 517-355-9527, 517-355-9527. On today's show, we will have plenty of discussion for you as we will talk about one of the greatest NBA playoff performances in NBA history last night. Steph Curry, if you didn't stay up late and catch what the man did, specifically in the fourth quarter going into overtime, you missed one for the ages. But don't worry, Current Sports has your back. We'll have a full recap, including discussion on that and breaking news concerning Steph Curry being named as the NBA's MVP. And not only did he set a record last night during the game against the Portland Trailblazers, but he has also made history when it concerns the MVP vote. You'll find out what exactly that is in just a second. Also, the Detroit Tigers, a walk-off loss when they played the Washington Nationals in game one of a three-game set in interleague play last night. Was that ugly or what? Yeah, the losing streak continues, folks. We'll talk about that. Also, new details concerning the Mateen Cleaves case. And there is one cop who has some interesting things to say, okay? So you'll find out details concerning that story and so much more. Don't go anywhere. You know how we start this party. Here are your current sports quick hit headliners for this Tuesday, May 10th. All right, let's start with the Michigan State baseball team. The MSU Spartan baseball team came up short in its attempt to take two of three games from Nebraska, falling 7-4 to the Huskers on Monday afternoon at McLane Stadium. Now, Nebraska pitcher Jake Myers scattered seven hits over eight complete innings as the Spartans worked from behind nearly all day and were never really able to maintain a sustained offensive threat. The Spartans will now travel to Kalamazoo today to take on Western Michigan University. First pitch is set for 3 p.m. All right, the Detroit Tigers have now lost, count them, seven straight games. The club fell last night to the Washington Nationals 5-4, the first of a three-game interleague road series for the Tigers. Tigers starter Anibal Sanchez lasted six-plus innings and was charged with four runs on six hits. But it was the bullpen who gave up yet another one when it mattered most.
Fly ball, deep right field, at the wall, it is gone! Clint Robinson, the Nets win 5-4.
Oh boy, folks. Yeah, seven straight losses for the Detroit Tigers. It's getting ugly. Michael Fulmer's maturation from top prospect to big league pitchers continue today when his third major league start will take place in place of injured Shane Green. Now, Joe Ross will take the mound for the Nats tonight as well. We'll have plenty more on that Tigers walk-off loss to the Nats in just a second. Don't go anywhere. According to CBS Sports' John Rothstein, the Michigan men's basketball team will play at UCLA this season, and the Bruins will return in 2017-18 visiting Ann Arbor. The Wolverines are currently scheduled to play two games in the 2K Sports Classic at Madison Square Garden against SMU, Marquette, or Pittsburgh, and then play at Cincinnati on December 17th, a game that is part of a former football contract. All right, former Michigan State quarterback Connor Cook has signed officially a contract with the Oakland Raiders. That's right, the Raiders agreed to a four-year rookie deal on Monday night, reportedly worth $2.96 million. Oh, that must be nice. With their fourth round pick, the number 100 overall selection in the NFL draft, Cook will receive nearly $620,000 as a signing bonus, according to Spotrac.com. Now, also Monday, former Michigan State offensive lineman Donovan Clark agreed to a four-year deal with San Diego. The seventh-round pick reportedly will receive $2.43 million, including a signing bonus of more than $86,000. 6'3", 312-pounder from Cincinnati, started 33 games at Michigan State, including 18 at right guard, 9 at right tackle, and 6 at left tackle. And former Michigan State wide receiver Aaron Burbridge. He signed his four-year rookie contract with the San Francisco 49ers last week on Friday. It was a four-year deal worth $2.44 million. All right, Bob Quinn has made his first trade as the Detroit Lions general manager, and it involves the team that he came from. That's right, the Lions acquired linebacker Jonathan Bostic from the New England Patriots on Monday for a conditional seventh-round choice in 2017. Bostic, who was 25 years old, was a second-round pick of the Chicago Bears in 2013 out of beautiful Florida. All right, in separate announcements on Monday, Mike Tirico said he was leaving ESPN, where he called Monday Night Football to join NBC Sports. And get this, ESPN has said that it has promoted Sean McDonough from college football to Monday Night Games. How about that? Now, the younger McDonough was the lead network voice of a sport in the early 1990s when he called Major League Baseball, if you remember, for CBS. Congrats on the promotion, Sean. It's big stuff. All right. Steph Curry returned from a sprained right knee to score an NBA record 17 points in overtime, finishing with 40, as the Golden State Warriors rallied to take a 3-1 lead in the Western Conference semifinals with a 132-125 victory over the Portland Trailblazers on Monday night. Steph Curry's 17 points in OT are the most ever, yes, the most ever, scored in overtime of any game, regular season or postseason. You gotta be kidding me. The Warriors now have a 3-1 series lead over the Trailblazers. It was also announced this morning that Curry is the league's first unanimous MVP. We'll have more on that in just a second. Don't go anywhere. And last but certainly not least, this conversation closed out yesterday's Current Sports. But Dwayne Wade is manned up and apologized Monday for his actions before Saturday's Game 3 when he took a few extra warm-up shots at the beginning of singing O Canada. Video showed Wade continuing his pregame routine for about 20 seconds before he took his spot in line with the rest of his teammates. Quote, "No disrespect at all from me. I apologize for Canada, thinking I would disrespect them as a country. So today, I just adjusted how I normally get ready for a game and got in the line first," end quote. That's coming from Miami Heat guard Dwayne Wade. And they also picked up a dub last night. So congratulations to Wade. Looks really inevitable that the Heat are going to meet the Cleveland Cavaliers in the Eastern Conference Finals now. All right, that wraps up your Current Sports Quick Hit Headliners. Our phone lines are open. 517-355-9527. 517-355-9527. You can also go to Facebook.com/Current Sports. Or even tweet me at AlMartinWKAR. And for the first time today, we are actually on Periscope. So if you follow me on Twitter and you want to catch a live visual feed of the show, just simply go to my Twitter page and that video should pop right up. And also those who are friends of mine on Facebook, you can catch the Facebook live stream as well. Well, that wraps up your Current Sports Quick Hit Headliners. Without further ado, we won't keep you waiting. Let's start the show.
Curry, Got it. That's Curry with the offensive rebound and a putback. Lillard passed it up. Green got a hand on it. A turnover. Up ahead. Curry. Curry left wide open. Right between the eyes.
I am back.
High screen comes. Curry. Some ball handling. Fires up a three. Does it again.
Eva. Steph produced exactly the way you would have predicted, or was it just a matter of just letting him go out there and see what he could do?
The guy's played basically one basketball game in 3 weeks. I expected what I saw early. I expected a lot of rust. I don't think anybody could have predicted the explosion. I figured he'd find his stroke and make a few shots, but I mean, that was crazy. The obvious answer would be Michael Jordan, and Steph does it so differently from Michael. I guess the similarity is just the awe-inspiring plays, the jaw-dropping plays that really bring the house down, even on the road. I remember those noises coming on the road when Michael would have a game like that, but the way Steph does it is totally different from Michael. It's obviously, two very different players, but that was something.
And that is how we start this afternoon's Current Sports. Is there really any other way to start today's show? First off, welcome to the show. I'm your host, Al Martin. Again, phone lines are open, 517-355-9527. Steph Curry. You know, I sat back last night and still a bit tired. As for those that are tuned into our live stream, you see that I'm downing coffee as we speak right now. I made a huge jug of it today because I was up till about, 2:30 a.m.? Now, I usually stay up late regardless of what day of the week it is, right? But my average time of going to sleep ranges from about 1 to 1:30, okay? I pushed it last night because, there were absolutely, not just the Warriors and Trailblazers. Was that a fantastic game or what? But even the game before that, the Miami Heat and the Toronto Raptors put on a show. They were kind of like the appetizer, though, before that Golden State Warriors and Portland Trailblazers game. That game also went into overtime. But, I was up late last night watching both of those games. And I remember when the dust settled on that Miami Heat and Toronto Raptors game, I said, there's no way that the Warriors and Trailblazers are going to come close to what we just saw. But they did and surpassed it, without a doubt, folks. That was really the best lineup of NBA basketball I've seen when it comes to multiple games being great at the same time on the same night in a while. It was absolutely fantastic. But I was sitting back and I was watching that Golden State game and watching what Steph Curry was able to do down the stretch of that game was one of the most remarkable individual performances that we have ever seen in the NBA, folks. Heck, in basketball, period. It was my jaw was on the floor watching. Again, and putting this in perspective, this is a man who is just coming off a knee injury, who hasn't played a full game in about, 2 weeks. And it's his first game back. And I must say, as the game started, and looking at Steph Curry's statistics, he had scored 23 points in regulation. Absolutely fantastic. Fantastic. But he had made just 2 of 13 three-point attempts during regulation, with a number of shots way off. And you could tell that Steph was just trying to find some sort of groove, some sort of rhythm. And the biggest question mark coming in was, of course, that's what Steve Kerr alluded to, was that he just wanted to see Steph get his wind back. And that was the big concern with Steph, was his breathing. Because when you take 2 weeks off, I mean, yeah, sure, you may be running on a treadmill and still doing the normal things to work out and keep your lungs up, keep that wind up. But basketball in-game conditioning is totally different. Totally different than what you do in the gym, okay? And all of a sudden, the game, you know, regulation ends, and Steph Curry had already done some unbelievable things to keep his team in the game. And it was such a back-and-forth battle between Steph and Damian Lillard, and CJ McCollum hit some crazy, crazy shots in that game as well. I mean, just pick a guy. I mean, there were multiple guys last night that had stellar performances, including Michigan State hoop great Draymond Green, who was also fantastic in that game. But then overtime started, and Steph Curry just said, okay, I'm done playing around. I'm about to show you why I am the best player in the game today. And, you know, just sitting back analyzing the Steph Curry phenomenon, folks, what makes Curry such a different player and such a guy that you look at and say, oh my gosh, I can't believe what he's doing here, is because it's just that. We've never seen a player shoot with the efficiency that Steph Curry shoots with. We've never seen a ball player that combines that shooting ability with a crazy handle of the basketball. I mean, Steph Curry is literally like watching a video game. You know, it's like literally just sitting down, playing 2K, creating a player, and putting all the stats up to 99 where he can shoot anywhere on the court. He can get a shot off on anyone on the court. I mean, it's remarkable. But the fact that he did this, folks, without having NBA in-game action in more than 2 weeks is what makes this so crazy. Again, Steph Curry. Steph Curry with 17? That's unbelievable in overtime. The most points by any player ever scored in an overtime or any game, regular season or postseason, NBA history. It's nuts. Steph Curry, that's absolutely insane. Now, there was also some breaking news that took place this morning concerning Curry and the MVP voting. Steph Curry became the first unanimous NBA Most Valuable Player this morning, winning the award for the second straight season. Curry swept all 131 first-place votes, including 130 from a panel of sports writers and broadcasters, and one from the Kia MVP fan vote. San Antonio Spurs forward Kawhi Leonard was second in the voting, followed by, of course, Cleveland Cavaliers forward LeBron James. Wow, Steph Curry, what a 24-hour stretch for Steph Curry, right? You get named the MVP and you do something, you know, that has never been done before in the voting for the MVP, and you do something that's never been done before in any overtime period, regular season or postseason, in an NBA playoff game. That's just nuts. Steph Curry, I was left speechless. I felt like, you know, how Charles Barkley, you know, Kenny the Jet Smith, and Shaquille O'Neal felt when they went to them immediately in studio after the dust had settled in that game. They were speechless because they had never seen anything like that. And Charles had mentioned that the only thing that can probably compare to that in an NBA playoff game was the performance of LeBron James, where he scored something crazy like 29 straight buckets against the Detroit Pistons. Yeah, I still have nightmares of that one, folks. Back during when LeBron was with the Cleveland Cavaliers when he first entered the league. I mean, that was a crazy moment. But Steph Curry, I mean, just where he took those shots, and even the cockiness that he displayed last night. I mean, there was multiple times where he looked at the fans and barked at him a bit, and you know, there was one moment where he hit a long two-pointer, and there's a timeout just called, and he looks at the fans and points to his wrist like it's about that time. Then later on in the game, he hits a big three-pointer, and then another timeout is called, and he says, I'm back. You can read his lips. Just spectacular what he's doing. But, and this is where I have to go on a bit of a rant here, if I haven't already have, right? Steph Curry becoming the first unanimous NBA Most Valuable Player is something that I just frankly don't agree with. I must say that, folks. And when we have this conversation of MVP, again, the league's most valuable player, I really think we should change the name of that award. The NBA needs to change the name of that award, folks. Why can't they call it the NBA's Player of the Year? Because when it comes to value, overall value, I think there's a few other names I could throw out there in the league today that could make an even greater case than putting in perspective Steph Curry's value to the Golden State Warriors. And to back that claim up, folks, and I got these stats from Fox Sports early yesterday before the Warriors and Blazers had even tipped off, before it was even announced that Steph Curry was going to even play last night. Get this. The Warriors yesterday, before tip-off, well before tip-off, hours before tip-off, they were favored by 4.5 points to beat the Portland Trailblazers last night. And even before it was announced, again, that Steph Curry would play, that number even jumped up to from 4.5 to 5. To 5. Still assuming that Steph Curry was not playing, folks. I just don't know that when you look at Steph Curry and putting in context what he means to the Golden State Warriors, I don't know if his value is greater. Well, heck, I do know. I know that Steph Curry's value is not greater than a LeBron James with the Cleveland Cavaliers, or heck, even a Chris Paul with the LA Clippers, or a James Harden with the Houston Rockets. I mean, I could throw out a lot of names here, folks. A Kawhi Leonard for the San Antonio Spurs. Because, you know, without Steph Curry, it's not like the wheels fall off for the Golden State Warriors. Heck, they are just coming off a series where they pretty much won the series, the entire series, without Steph Curry. Cleveland without LeBron, 1-5. 1-5 this year in the lowly Eastern Conference. Heck, I mean, we could put this in a historical context for LeBron James. If you remember back in the 2009-2010 year, right before LeBron James decided to go on national television and announce that he was going to take his talents to South Beach in Miami, the Cleveland Cavaliers went 61-21 that year. Pretty impressive, right? LeBron James left from that team, and what happened? The Cleveland Cavaliers, they won 19 games. So what happens the following year? Again, this is when LeBron James is in Miami. The following year after that, the Cleveland Cavaliers, they win 21 games. What happens the year after that? They win 24 games. How about the year after that, Al? The low 30s. LeBron James returns to the squad, and what happens? They reach back up into the 50-win column. Value is what this award is about, folks. The league's most valuable player. I just don't know if Steph Curry is the most valued player in the NBA today. Is he the best player in the league right now? Oh, without a doubt, Steph Curry is not only the best player in the league right now, he's slowly becoming, if not already is, the face of the National Basketball Association. All right, I'm not arguing that here. I just don't think the man is the most valuable. Nonetheless, and to be the first unanimous MVP, I don't know, Isaac. I'm struggling with that, dude. I'm struggling, even though it's great. And we're reactionary in the sports world. It's all about what have you done for me lately. And Steph Curry and what he did last night and what he's been doing, what his team did throughout the regular season, 73 wins, eclipsing the Chicago Bulls, record of the 1990s. Steph Curry throwing up crazy numbers. And you can even argue that Steph Curry is a more improved player than he was last year, even though last year he was the league's MVP and had numbers that were off the charts. At the same time, this is a Warriors team that is so deep and so good that they don't implode if Steph Curry is not out there playing. I want to invite right now the man behind the glass, our fantastic engineer of WKAR's Current Sports, Isaac Constance to the show. Isaac, how you doing, my friend?
Steph-tacular, but I've got to be with you, Al, because, okay, first off, let's touch on last night's game. That is a historically great performance. We've never seen anything of that likeness. 17 points in overtime. I did the math. 17 divided by 5/12. That's the amount that he would have scored if he had played the whole quarter of a regular game. And that's 41 points. If he kept up that pace, he would have scored 41 points in a quarter, topping his running mate, Klay Thompson's 37 points in a quarter best.
And let's be real, that probably wouldn't have happened, though. I mean, a lot of things would have had to go to sustain that through 12 minutes.
No, it probably wouldn't have.
Right.
But at the same time,
but yeah, it's still.
Wouldn't have scored 17 either.
That's fun to think about. Yeah.
It is. And it was unprecedented. It was something that obviously pushed his team to the brink, gave them that win they would not have won if not for Steph Curry. He started that game 0-9 from three. Mm-hmm. His first three was on his 10th attempt, and then he couldn't miss suddenly. But I'd like to rewind the track back maybe 2 months when I went on a rant Wednesday
saying that
Steph shouldn't be unanimous. And I didn't go it from the perspective of most valuable player. I think that's a very valid way to go at it. Value is so misperceived in the NBA. I went at it from a historical perspective. Mm-hmm. And this is the thing. Steph was great this season. 30 points a game, 6 assists, whatever
you want. The best player in the NBA.
By far.
Right.
But at the same time, there have been a lot of best players in the NBA before. We've got best player of all time in Michael Jordan, who once averaged 35 a game mm-hmm. at age 24. We've got the Big O, who averaged a triple-double over a season. Didn't sniff a unanimous MVP. Kareem, 32-16. Also not even close. Then we've got LeBron James. You mentioned the season right before Cleveland.
Right.
He also one vote away from unanimity. And then you've got so many historical greats. Wilt Chamberlain averaging 50 a game, mm-hmm. over 20 rebounds. He doesn't get it either. Steph's season is historically great. It's historically unprecedented in terms of how well he shot the ball. But at the same time, all of those guys were too. I'm not against Steph being unanimous if those guys had been. Since they're not, I don't think Steph should be.
And I exactly hear what you're saying there, Isaac. And, you know, when you look at it, I think it really – because there's always that one guy. There's always that one guy when it comes to this voting situation. That one guy who says, I don't know, you know, who always comes in and says, well, if you look at history here, there's always that one guy. It was shocking to me that there was not at least just one guy that wanted to be different to say, no, I'm going with somebody else here. That was very shocking. And I think that speaks to the overall perception that Steph Curry has in the NBA. And that's where I want to go with this. Steph Curry is a great ambassador for the league. He can't do anything wrong. He's got the baby face. He's on the commercials. His family, he's got the beloved daughter. You know, Aisha is everywhere. I saw her on the Rachel Ray Show with her own cooking segment. You know, his family is so beloved. He's like, I've never seen a player that has such an aura surrounded around him like Curry. The kid can't do anything wrong. The kid can't do anything wrong. And I think that rubs off in the minds of not just those who love the NBA and love the game, but the voters, those who are doing the voting. And they say, hey, how can you not vote for this
exactly.
kid?
Exactly.
You know what I mean? How can you not?
Yeah, I got a text right before the show started, actually, from my friend. Mm-hmm. No evidence of Steph Curry's greatness is more apparent than the fact that he was a unanimous MVP.
Right.
How great do you have to be to prevent some bleep from saying, well, actually, ... was better? And he's right. But at the same time, right. I responded with, it's not that it was that historically unprecedented. The fact is, he's so likable.
He loves Curry.
Oh. Who doesn't like Steph Curry?
I mean, yeah. I mean, he's everywhere. And to read a few comments here, and I'm going to get to Apache. I know he's online. One, stay with me, Apache. To read a few comments here from our Facebook page, this one comes from Shonda. Quote, boy, stop hating on Curry. He has been the MVP and best player the last 2 years. Shonda, That's not what I'm arguing here. That is not where I'm going here. I think Stevie Wonder can see that Steph Curry is clearly the best player in the league right now. There's no one better. There's no one doing what Steph Curry has done in the last 2 years. And that's why he has been named the MVP. But again, I think we're getting the definition of this award totally wrong in my eyes. The award is called Most Valuable Player. And I think those who follow the NBA have looked at the award as, okay, the award should go to the best player on the league's best team. That's historically how this award has been given out. And if that's the case, if you're going to do that, the award needs, the name of it needs to be changed, Isaac. Because that's the problem that I have. That if it was called the NBA's Player of the Year, of course it's Steph Curry's, okay? But most valuable? Curry's value does not equate to that of LeBron James. I'm sorry. Also, Justin J. Dunn says the man's shot selection is comical. LOL, I was crying laughing at the shots he was taking and making. Yeah, it's like watching a video game. Let's go to line one right now. We've got our dear friend Apache on the line to talk about anything that's on his sports noggin. Apache, how you doing, my friend? I haven't heard from you in a while.
Yeah, I've been busy, man. Been busy.
That's good to hear from you. What's on your mind?
I got to eat a little crow, but first of all, I want to mention, I talk about your MVP. Your description was very good. I agree with that. There's too many variables and intangibles around players that affects the value of a team player or a great player. I thought last year, sincerely, that single-handedly, King James carried his team to the sixth game. He got him to the sixth game, ran out of gas. But it was incredible what he did. Those guys, the ragtag and wounded, and he got him to the sixth game, and I thought he should have been MVP. And that may sound kind of weird, but that's a great player he is. I've been watching him lately in the last couple of series. He's a hell of a distributor. He's not worried about his point total. He knows how valuable he is, and his agent knows how valuable he is, and the NBA knows how valuable he is. He's not in competition against Curry. He got his own game, and it's incredible. And I'm going to enjoy seeing them guys play against each other, hopefully. Mm-hmm. The other thing is that last year about this time, you had a little discussion, and you and I had a debate about some of the best shooters in the history of the NBA, and I threw out Gal Goodrich and Bob McAdoo, and Bernard King as being comparable to Curry. After last night, man, I'm going to retract that argument. My apologies, brother. He was incredible. And you're right. You cannot synthesize game situations in any kind of practice, in any kind of game. Guard game, mm-hmm. guard game, a golf game, a baseball game. Those, no matter how hard you try, you cannot synthesize the real game. That game was real. He missed his first 10 shots, and they would laugh at him, yelling air ball and air ball. And you know what? He came back and punished everybody in the gym. It was incredible. He cut out their hearts. I saw the bench. I saw the bench in the overtime after he hit a couple of threes, and they were just, their shoulders dropped.
Right.
It was an incredible display. Incredible, man. So you got another one over me, man.
Hey, man. Who's keeping count, though, about you?
Well, you ain't have to, but you automatic. Hey, I'll see you later, brother.
Thank you so much, Apache. And, yeah, I agree with Apache. When you look at watching that game, I had to – thank goodness for DVR, because I went back and watched a little bit of that overtime, Isaac. It's so comical watching the bench freak out when Steph hits a shot. And also, you know what I'm bringing up. There was one guy.
Allen. Yes, the Portland Trail Blazers
owner. The owner, he was sitting there. And when Steph hit one, it was one – I think it was the last three-pointer that Steph hit. The camera briefly goes over to the Portland Trail Blazers owner. And I think right when the announcer says that jaws are dropping here, you can see the owner's jaw literally drop. And he's looking like, I can't believe this is happening right now. It was incredible. It was incredible last night. If you didn't catch it, folks, it's all over social media. Again, Steph Curry, 17 points in overtime. Absolutely unbelievable. I want to throw this out there before we hit this first break, Isaac. This is a story that was written this morning around 9 a.m. by Gary Ritley of MLive.com. And it's an update and then new details concerning the Mateen Cleaves case. Of course, former Michigan State basketball great Mateen Cleaves. He's found himself in some hot water concerning a sexual assault case. But get this. Interesting detail. I don't know if you saw this, Isaac, but I'm reading directly from MLive.com here. Quote, a Mundy Township police officer claims he was pressured by township officials to portray former NBA player and Michigan State basketball star Mateen Cleaves as guilty of an alleged sexual assault. Officer Brian Ogle filed a lawsuit Wednesday, May 4th, alleging he was disciplined by the Mundy Township Police Department after he allegedly reported violations of state law by the township to the Wayne County Prosecutor's Office, which is handling the Cleaves investigation. The lawsuit does not provide further details on the alleged state laws violated or who violated them. Ogle's attorney, Dean Yotis, declined to comment on the lawsuit. Now, Wayne County Prosecutor spokesman Maria Miller declined to comment on the lawsuit as well. The lawsuit names Mundy Township and its police department as defendants. No specific police administrators are named in the case. Now, moving on here later on in the article, Ogle claims that he was involved in the Cleaves investigation, which began September of last year. The lawsuit alleges he, quote, found himself at odds, end quote, with the township and police department because he would not portray Mr. Cleaves, quote, he would not portray Mr. Cleaves as guilty of sexual assault, end quote. Now, the lawsuit claims Ogle emailed a Wayne County prosecutor investigating the Cleaves case on November 17th of 2015, reporting, quote, suspected violations of Michigan state law and or regulations committed by the township and its police department. On, get this now, on February 4th, the lawsuit alleged Ogle was notified in writing that the township found him in violation of township rules and regulations stemming from an incident including Mateen Cleaves that occurred September of the previous year. If this comes out that the Mundy Township Police Department was in the wrong here and did pressure Ogle to portray Mateen as guilty, boom goes the dynamite, dude. Boom goes the dynamite. I was absolutely floored when I read that story this morning. Let's hit our first break. When we come back, we will talk about the Detroit Tigers. We could have used a little Steph Curry magic last night. 7 straight losses for the Detroit Tigers, folks, and everyone in town. And I even saw an image on social media saying, quote, fire Osmus. It's getting ugly, folks. That and more right here on WKAR's Current Sports. Welcome back to WKAR's Current Sports. I am your host, Al Martin. Got to remind you all that, hey, we are a day away from the taping of Current Sports TV, and we have moved our production time for the spring and summer months from 6 p.m. on Wednesdays to 3 p.m. on Wednesdays starting tomorrow, May 11th at 3 p.m. I'll be chatting with Leah Hartman, Okemos High School girls basketball star who has just scholarships coming out of every way in direction. She's just unbelievable. Unbelievable. I believe she'll be a sophomore next year. And yeah, only a freshman for Okemos. And already she's getting a lot of looks from everyone out there, including the Michigan State women's basketball team. So tomorrow, Leah Hartman will be in the house along with her parents to discuss her basketball career and how she fell in love with the game and how she improved. And also, she's a track and field star as well. She has a profound love for track and field. So if you want to check out that episode and be live in studio, all you got to do is simply go to WKAR.org and sign up online for free and then just show up. All right. I love seeing your pearly whites each and every Wednesday here on the campus of Michigan State University. All right, folks. Well, what an odd game last night, huh? For the Detroit Tigers as they opened interleague play, a 3-game set against the Washington Nationals last night. Bryce Harper was one fiery dude last night. So much so that he was actually ejected. Yeah, ejected. Ejected, folks. He was pretty hot. He did not agree with the ump on numerous calls throughout that game. And on the last one, he just flipped his wig and decided to just completely go off. So one moment, Bryce Harper was getting thrown out of the game. And then next, his teammate, Clint Robinson, hit a game-ending homer. Walk-off victory, walk-off dub for the Nats over the Tigers. Isaac, do we still have that bike? Can we play that one more time? Clint Robinson, walk-off homer. Cue it.
High fly ball, deep right field, at the wall, it is gone! Clint Robinson, the Nats win 5-4.
Yeah, folks, the Tigers have now lost, get this, 7 straight games. 7 straight games, and everyone in Tiger fandom seems to be calling for the firing of Detroit Tigers manager Brad Ausmus. Starting pitcher Anibal Sanchez, he started strong, cruised to the first 3 innings, scoreless, allowed 1 run in the 5th inning, 2 on a Daniel Murphy home run in the 6th, and hit for himself in the top of the 7th inning. And all of a sudden, as the game goes on, starts getting really competitive. And you saw, you know, when it comes to Anibal Sanchez's outing, you saw Brad Ausmus say, all right, Ausmus, you know, he hooked Sanchez for Kyle Ryan. And this is what Ausmus had to say concerning that move. Quote, I thought he was done after the bunt, he said. I thought he was mentally fried. So Kyle Ryan comes in to bat for Sanchez. And then Sanchez, you know, he goes on to allow 4 runs on 6 hits in 6 innings, 6-plus innings, I should say. He walked 3, struck out 2. And then in comes the bullpen that you all love so much, folks. Righty Alex Wilson took over for Sanchez and pitched 1 2/3, scoreless innings. He got out of a bases-loaded jam, if you remember, in the 7th inning with a strikeout looking and a pop-up. And then Mark Lowe took the ball in the 9th, and he is the man who gave up the walk-off hit to Clint Robinson. Tigers, again, 7 straight losses. Isaac, do you think it's time for the Tigers to make a move here and let go of Ausmus, or is it way too early like we preached yesterday?
I think it's way too early still, just like we said yesterday. At the same time, if this season goes on and the Tigers can't get above 500 or closer to that playoff race, yeah, you let the guy go. Because while I think this team is riddled with so many deeper lying problems than at manager, you mentioned last day on the show, actually, you can't control how a player hits. A player with a track record of 300-plus seasons, like JD Martinez, you can't control what he does once he steps to the plate. Miguel Cabrera, batting well below 300 this season, I think around 270, similar situation there.
Yeah, he hasn't been great, right.
But at the same time, Brad Ausmus is not the solution either. And I think this is a team that eventually wants to compete. If he can't get this team above 500 by the midway point of the season, sure, you let him go, but you give him at least until then. It's a long season. It's a short way through.
Yeah, and you know, if you look at the Tigers, again, they sit at 14-17 during the bottom barrel of the AL Central right now. They have been outscored 48-20 while losing 7 in a row. So during that stretch of time, 48-20, folks. And they led 4-1 heading into the 6th. And you know, baseball is such a crazy sport because you play so many games and things can change on the drop of a dime. I mean, the Tigers, even though it doesn't look like it right now, we've seen crazier things in baseball where a team who's really struggling down in the dumps happens to just hit a right stride and they get on a win streak. I mean, crazy things happen. That's my point here. Crazy things happen throughout the course of an elongated MLB year. But at the same time, you have to harp on something that gives you hope that a turnaround can happen. And right now, it's so crazy because, again, you know, you had a pretty good outing from Anibal Sanchez. And then old worries, old hat problems rise to the surface again last night, just like they did with Justin Verlander's outing against the Texas Rangers a few days ago over the weekend on Sunday. And you're sitting there saying, oh my goodness, here we go again. So we've seen the bullpen play outstanding this year, and we've seen them hit rough patches, as they normally do historically when looking at recent years and recent woes for the Detroit Tigers. And what we haven't been privy to is something you just alluded to, Isaac, is the Tigers at bat. Again, being outscored 48-20, and when you look at this lineup is fantastic. It's a fantastic lineup, and I'm not used to seeing, it's so odd because I'm not used to seeing Miguel Cabrera struggle like he has so far this year. So, you know, and now who they have, Michael Fulmer, you know, he's going to the mound. You know, he gets his first look at the Tigers. And, you know, Fulmer took Shane Green's spot in the rotation when Green went on the disabled list, allowed four runs in the first inning before settling down and giving up one over his final four in a 9-4 loss to Cleveland, if you remember, last week, Thursday. So there's no consistency here. That's my point. There's no consistency for the Tigers because we've seen at times the bullpen come out and play great. Then we've seen them muck it up like they did last night. We've seen great starting pitching from guys like Jordan Zimmermann. Most recently, you know, Justin Verlander. Not a bad outing from Anibal Sanchez. But we've also seen it just absolutely horrid with many guys on that roster with an ERA of over 5. We've seen hot Tiger bats go completely cold. So everything is everywhere right now. And you sit there and say, okay, a shakeup needs to happen. Something needs to happen to wake this team up and to get them focused. Because I think a lot of this has to do with, you know, the big muscle between the ears. Mentally, the Tigers just don't seem in tune with anything right now. But I just don't know what that shakeup is. It's not like they can reach down in the minors because it's slim pickings in the minors right now for the Tigers. There's no one that you can look at and say, okay, that kid's ready. Let's throw him up here to see if he can get something going for this team. That's really thin right now. And, you know, when you look at the overall box of things, I just don't believe that firing Brad Ausmus is going to help you in any way right now. If I felt like Brad Ausmus was if his decisions were really outlandish during this 7-game losing streak, I would say, all right, okay, I would get it. But honestly, I can't put all of this 7-game losing streak on the shoulders of Brad Ausmus because I really think that he's made some logical decisions that have unfortunately not panned out well. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah. Point to a specific instance where Brad Ausmus called a steal at home base up 4-1. You know what I'm saying? There's not anything that you can really pinpoint. Now, I think part of the problem for the Tigers is I turned on the game last night and they were up 4-1. They finished with 4 runs. And that's the problem when you ask me, is that bats that might be cracking fall mute later on in the game. And they don't say anything. And that's the problem. You've got to put these games to bed, and the Tigers can't seem to resolve that issue. Now, it's not like basketball. It's not like football where you've got a Z42XY play that'll switch everything. In baseball, you're not going to send out a player and say, all right, this time, I don't want you to hit the ball. No, it's a simple formula. You hit the ball. You pitch well. Yes, there are certain calls that you can make, but as much of that as the hitting coach and the pitching coach as the actual manager, there's nothing specifically that you can point to that Brad Ausmus has done horribly wrong this season as compared to earlier in his tenure. Now, if you want, you can say he should have been fired a season ago, 2 seasons ago. He didn't have enough managerial experience. That's fair. At the same time, there is nothing new that explains why people should be so outraged and think that Brad Ausmus should be fired besides simple losses. That's
yeah.
it.
Yeah, and it's really tough right now. The Tigers right now rank 16th in the league in batting right now and also 22nd in the league in pitching. So I don't have an answer. I don't have an answer for this. You just got to let it play out. It's so early. It's so early in the MLB year. And again, I always say this all the time. We live in a world where it's a what have you done for me lately situation, especially in baseball, and people are so reactionary. Give it some time. Let this thing play out. I know it's bad. It's really bad right now. 7-game losing streak. That's horrible right now. But let this thing play out, because I just don't think that a reactionary move, firing Brad Ausmus, I don't think it's the right one, because I don't see how that helps his club. Who are you going to bring in? I don't know. I don't know. Call in, folks. 517-355-9527. 517-355-9527. Let's hit our second break. When we come back, we will finally get to this Eastern Michigan University athletics story that you don't want to miss, that was done by HBO's Real Sports. That and more. Don't go anywhere. We'll be right back. Welcome back to WKAR's Current Sports. All the Spartan football fans out there, a few days that you definitely want to mark on your calendars here. Actually, 2 days that you want to mark on your calendars here. The Big Ten Network released its 2016 football Saturday night games yesterday, and Michigan State makes 2 appearances on the schedule, both on the road. The defending champion Spartans will visit Indiana at 8 p.m. on October 1st, and Maryland at 7:30 p.m. on October 22nd. BTN also confirmed that it will air MSU's season opener against Furman on Friday, September 2nd. There you have that. And also, folks, you don't want to miss tomorrow's Current Sports, as we will invite the new head girls basketball coach at Okemos High School. Her name is Kristen Rasmussen, and she has ties locally here as well as in the WNBA, folks. I actually got a chance to chat with Kristen yesterday via text, and I want to give a big congratulations to her because she is pregnant. She's 8 months pregnant right now. That's why she couldn't be on today's show. Tried to get her on, but she had a doctor's appointment that she's undergoing right now. So she couldn't join us on the airways, but she promised me she would be on tomorrow's show. We will also invite Diamond Lee Young, beat reporter for the Golden State Warriors, later on this week on the show as well. So you'll want to keep it locked right here throughout the rest of the week. We got some great interviews and some great segments coming for you. All right, folks. Eastern Michigan University. I don't know if you guys saw this report, but HBO's Real Sports really did a really good job at tackling a subject that I had no idea was even a problem when it comes to Division I athletics here in America. Now, Eastern Michigan football has not had a winning season in 20 years and actually draws the smallest attendance in D1 football. Now, for years, members of the Eastern Atlantic community have debated the purpose of funding the athletic program. And this month, actually, Real Sports with Brian Gumbel shined an unpleasant national spotlight on the university's funding of its athletic department. I want to play a snippet of that report right here.
There is money out there, but it's only going to go to a couple of dozen schools, and we are chasing that money in an athletic arms race that we cannot win.
Professor Howard Bunces teaches accounting at Eastern Michigan University.
We are throwing money down the drain in athletics.
Throwing money down the drain?
We're inhibiting the quality of education we provide. At our universities, the spending needs to be on education and what goes on in the classroom. We've lost our way.
For those of us that are older, have kids, whatever, we don't use the athletics. We don't have time.
Kelly Adams is a 32-year-old senior and a mother of 2. Like a lot of Eastern Michigan students, she's what's known as a non-traditional student, who is either older, working, or a parent. Adams went back to school not for sports, but for a degree and a better life.
Do you know where all your money is going?
Oh, no. I have yet to figure it out, because my classroom that I'm in right now, we have 15 computers. There's 35 of us.
When you chose Eastern Michigan, did you know that they were going to pay a basketball coach more than $300,000?
Wow, that's a lot of money. I want to be a basketball coach. Forget my degree. I'm going to school to be a basketball coach. That is a lot of money.
Did you know that on home games, the football team doesn't stay in their dormitories? They actually stay in a hotel not too far from campus?
Why? Why? That makes no sense.
So get this, folks. Eastern Michigan accounting professor Howard Bunces estimated students pay about $1,000 through tuition costs to fund the athletic departments annually without hope of it ever becoming self-sufficient. Now, in 2014-15, the athletic department at Eastern Michigan spent $33.9 million, about 80%, which came from institutional support. This is data collected by USA Today. It's university financial assistance, about $27.3 million, actually ranked sixth nationally of the 231 schools included in that data. In perspective, get this. Western Michigan received about $25.8 million, or 74% of its expenses, from institutional support, while Central Michigan received about $19.4 million, or 69.7%. So athletic programs are getting, when it comes to Western, Central Michigan, and Eastern, roughly from 70 to 80% of its funding from the university itself. Not self-sufficient at all. To put that in perspective, Michigan and Michigan State each had less than 1%. Less than 1% of its expenses come from institutional support. And only 12 athletic programs with data collected by USA Today turned a profit without taking money from their university. So out of 231 schools, only 12 made moolah off of their athletic department. When do you get out the game, Isaac? Or do you ever get out the game?
I think the goal just has to be, you've got to win on the field. That's great. On the court, whatever. You've also got to win on the stat sheet in the finance department, because it's true, $1,000 is a lot to spend for a student who will probably never go to a game. And a lot of those extraneous costs are really for unnecessary benefits of the athletic department. Staying in hotels before game nights, that's not really necessary. This is a tough issue. It's tough to tackle with one sentence. But the other factor is, in Michigan, you don't go to Eastern Michigan to watch sports. You know what I'm saying?
Exactly. For schools like EMU, and again, for Michigan and Michigan State, big-time athletics, you know, programs that are nationally renowned, I mean, only 1% of their help comes from, which is still a lot of money. 1% is still a lot of money, but only 1% comes from institutional support from the university itself. But again, it blows my mind that only 12 out of 231 schools in this data, only 12 athletic programs, 12, turned a profit without taking money from its respective university. That's mind-blowing. You know how many Division I schools are out there, big-time programs out there, and only 12 made moolah without taking money from and getting support from the school? That's crazy to me. And I think it just kind of really shines a light on how big-time athletics may seem sexy, but at the end of the day, in many regards, it's just not profitable. It's not profitable. And I think a lot of people don't understand that. So we'll dive more into this throughout the week, folks. In the meantime, special thanks to all of you out there for tuning in and watching today's Current Sports right here on WKAR AM 870 East Lansing. Again, on tomorrow's show, folks, we will invite the new head coach of the Okemos High School girls varsity basketball team, Kristen Rasmussen, to the show. You don't want to miss that interview and so much more. See you tomorrow, and be easy, people.